will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. It is great to have you with us once again on the program here in just a minute or so. We're going to talk with Dave Adams of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association, get you caught up on what's going on in the state of Virginia, where Governor Ralph Northam's gun magazine suppressor ban cleared a House committee on Friday. It is on schedule right now to get a final vote in the House coming up on Tuesday, and that is the deadline for bills to cross over between the House of Origin and the other chambers. So House bills have to cross over to the state Senate. Senate bills have to cross over to the House. Most of the Senate gun control measures have already cleared out of the Senate. They're over on the House side. But House Bill 961, that is a big one. And it looks like that one is going to come down to the wire. It passed out of committee on Friday, and it looks like it'll be up for a final vote on Tuesday. But before we talk with Dave, one more legislative item I want to talk about out of New Mexico, and that is red flag legislation. We talked last week with Cibola County Sheriff Tony Mace, who is the head of the New Mexico State Sheriff's Association, as well as the head of the Western State Sheriff's Association. And he was vociferous in his opposition to that red flag legislation, going so far as to say, listen, if this becomes law, he is prepared to go to court. He is prepared to be held in contempt of court for refusing to actually enforce a red flag order. 30 of the state's 33 county sheriffs have spoken out against this legislation. The rank and file officers of the Albuquerque Police Department have spoken out against this legislation. But unfortunately, it looks like this bill is likely to become law in New Mexico because the state Senate on Friday approved that red flag bill 22-20. So by the narrowest of margins, they were able to get that bill out of the state Senate over onto the state House side, where it looks like it's going to have an easier time in New Mexico. And unfortunately, I believe that this bill probably going to become a bad law here before long. And then we'll see the inevitable court challenges. We'll also see the challenges from those Second Amendment sanctuary communities and those folks on the ground who have vowed to oppose these red flag measures. But if you're a New Mexico gun owner, thank you for everything that you've done. Thank you for showing up at the Roundhouse. Thank you for contacting your state senators. Now, please direct your attention to your state representative. And again, point out the opposition from those very law enforcement agencies that are expected to enforce this law. It will be the county sheriffs that are supposed to serve these orders. And again, the vast majority of them, 30 out of 33, say, we don't want this. We won't use it. We think there are better ways to go about helping those in crisis than this bad bill. So please make sure that your state reps have heard from you there in New Mexico. Now on to Virginia, where, again, we've got a number of gun control proposals that are making their way through the legislature, but right now we're focused on House Bill 961, the governor's gun magazine suppressor trigger activator ban, which was watered down in committee on Friday, and it also squeaked out of committee by a pretty narrow vote. Now the question is it going to pass out of the House? And once that happens, what's going to happen over on the state Senate side, where you've had four Democrat state senators who, so far anyway, have said that they are opposed to the language of House Bill 961. So far. Take a look and a listen to our interview with Dave Adams, Legislative Affairs Director with the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. Hey, Dave, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program. It's good talking with you today.
Thanks for having me back, Cam.
You bet. You know, I wish the news was better. Unfortunately, House Bill 961 started moving on Friday. They've got a deadline of the end of business on Tuesday to get this bill out of the House of Delegates and over onto the Senate side. And it sure seems like not every House Democrat is on board with this in Virginia, Dave.
There are four that we know of in the Senate that have expressed concern. There was one Democrat that did not vote in committee on Friday. He abstained. In conversations with the NRA lobbyists, he knew of two that were not on board. And as of Tuesday of last week, they weren't even going to hear this bill. The governor really wants it and apparently put pressure on the committee to bring it up. And they worked on Thursday trying to make some changes that they thought would mollify members that did not like the original version. And it got out of committee, and they had a session yesterday, and it went through the pro forma first reading, so it'll be able to be addressed on the floor and be able to be voted out by tomorrow's deadline now.
So, because they've got to read this 3 days in a row, right? So sure. Sunday, Monday, and then the final vote would be on Tuesday.
Right. Now, technically, there are ways that they can, you know, they can go through the entire calendar, because the Senate did this with the bill on Friday. They can go through the calendar, report it to the next reading, and then have a supplemental calendar and take it up. But they put this in line so it can be taken up and done final vote tomorrow.
Okay. When they hold this first reading, do they take a vote? Do we have a whip count of what things look like at the moment?
No, that's all done by voice vote. It's just okay. It's a pro forma thing. Now, when they go to second reading, the House is a little different than the Senate. They will have some debate on it, but the actual vote and debate will be on third reading. You can kill a bill on second reading, but this isn't going to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, as you say, clearly the governor wants this. And is that where the pressure is coming from right now? Is it coming from the governor's office? Is it coming from Eileen Filler Corn, the new House speaker there? I mean, who is, because as you say, we've got these four Democrat state senators that, at least as of last report, have said we're not on board with the language. Now, they've changed this language, but they've weakened it. But is it really just your impression that the governor wants to sign something that he can call a gun ban?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it was interesting. I didn't hear the conversation while I was in the meeting before it got started on Friday. But when I went back and looked at the video of the session of the committee meeting,
mm-hmm.
and they had turned on the volume before the video started. You had the audio, but you didn't have anything on the screen. You just had the holding picture on there, and you could overhear the Secretary Moran telling someone, and I think it was a member of the committee, look, we've got seven, we're hoping to get the eighth one today. I mean, it's like he's got a checklist, he's counting them off, which ones he's getting, and this is the last one.
All right, so the bill was modified in this committee. It was watered down even further. Now, first of all, I want to make sure that folks understand, there's no way that any bill that bans commonly owned firearms or magazines, suppressors, is going to get the backing of any organization, whether it's Virginia Shooting Sports Association, NRA, VCDL, or any others. But we're not the target audience, right? We're the target of this bill, but we're not the target audience of this bill. And so this bill was watered down. Under House Bill 961, as it was introduced, there was a registration requirement for anybody who wanted to maintain possession of their so-called assault firearms. That registration requirement was taken out. The magazine limit was raised from 10 to 12 rounds, which is, it's absolutely absurd. The suppressor, the ban on continuing to possess your suppressor, that was removed. But there is still no grandfather clause for magazines. And so as this bill stands, Dave, this would still turn, I believe, the majority of Virginia gun owners into felons simply for keeping the things that they currently possess legally.
That's exactly right. And former congressman and former state senator Tom Garrett testified at the committee on Friday, and he said exactly the same thing. And he named off several handguns that, they have magazines that come standard with over 12. And I don't know, to show you how arbitrary their numbers are, I don't know of any, maybe some handguns that come with a 12-round magazine, but most of them are like in, increments of 5, mm-hmm. 10, 15, 20, 30. Where they came up with 12 is just, mind-boggling.
I guess it's a matter of, going to these lawmakers. Would you accept 11? Would you accept 12? Okay, mm-hmm. We got you at 12. But you're right. It does absolutely nothing, practically speaking, except that I believe that the reason why they didn't take the grandfather clause out of the magazine portion of this bill is because they wanted something else that they could sacrifice, if need be, to try to get this bill out of the House. So would you be surprised to see this amended further on the floor of the House over the next couple of days?
It is possible that could happen. I don't know how much further they can go, because I can tell you that Lori Haas, who is with one of the gun control groups and is also the mom of one of the Virginia Tech shooting victims, her daughter was injured at the shooting in 2007. She's been part of this. She came out of the governor's office along with Secretary Moran on Thursday evening, and they were going through what they could do to change the bill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, look, you know, I saw the social media reaction from Brady campaign and a couple of other gun groups, and they were not complaining about this bill getting watered down in committee. They were exuberant that, you know, a gun ban passed out of a House committee. And they're looking, I really, truly do believe they're looking for the headlines. They're not looking for, you know, how this is actually going to benefit the public safety in Virginia, because I don't think it's going to. But they're looking for that PR win. And so if they've got to make, you know, further changes, I think their attitude is whatever we have to do to get this bill to become a law, and then we can go back and we can, you know, add in. We can come back next year and we can, you know, reduce it from 12 to 10. We can remove the grandfather clause. We can go back once they've got this on the books and they've got their foot in the door. You know, after that, they believe it's just a matter of time before they can get exactly what they want, which is a ban on the ownership of these firearms, these magazines, and these suppressors.
I think you're exactly right. You know, there was some question as to why the House would put the senators that are against this bill into a position of having to either go against the governor or go against their constituents. Because, you know, everybody's looking to 2021 when redistricting happens after the census. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're in the back of the Democrats' mind, they're probably thinking, well, you know, we get to draw the map entirely this time. So we can, you know, secure our districts a little bit more. Some of those that were swing districts in the House that they took on and took the seat this past election, they're probably thinking they can strengthen that. You can only do that so much with the Senate district, because Senate districts are larger to start with. And so they've put their senators in a position of, you know, having to go against their constituents. And I know for a fact everybody's being pounded on this bill. Well, we're telling our members to contact legislators. DCBL is telling people to contact their legislators. NRA has done that. They're getting pounded. And I've been told that the mood up there on the Hill is not a very happy mood right now. They've done it to themselves, but the fact is that tensions are high right now. So I don't know why the House, knowing that it's going to be hard getting out of the Senate, why they would even bring this up, other than to pacify the governor.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think the governor wants to be able to say he got his gun control agenda through. And, you know, most folks, sadly, I mean, this isn't true of gun owners on this issue, but most folks aren't going to read beyond the headline. Most Virginians are not going to, you know, delve into the nitty gritty of these bills. Gun owners will, because, again, it's our rights that are at stake. But I believe it's a pretty cynical political ploy on the part of the governor. Certainly wouldn't be his first that we've seen from the governor over the past few years and past few months. But I think this is certainly the latest. Now one thing I want to ask you about, actually a couple of things. You mentioned redistricting, and I don't want to go too far afield here, but one of the things that I've noticed this session, last year when the Democrats did not have control of the state legislature, they were all on board with a redistricting process that would take the politics out of it, right? It was going to be a nonpartisan commission that was going to be looking at drawing these boundaries. Now that they're in control of the state house, they're backing away from their support for that plan, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And, you know, Joe Morrissey, the newly elected state senator from the city of Richmond, said when he got elected, they better not do that. So it's interesting just how things change when you get into control of the legislature.
It is, absolutely. Now, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about, Dave, since the crossover deadline is Tuesday, February 11th, and they're really running out of time, it looks like we are going to see some pretty bad bills die. They're not going to be able to cross over. Is that correct? Like Dan Helmer's bill going after the NRA range. There was another bill, I think, going after outdoor ranges that's been heavily modified. What are some of the bad bills that look like they're going to die in the House and not cross over?
Well, you named two of them. The worst of those was really Dan Helmer. And while he may have thought he was just targeting the NRA range, he actually would have captured Colonial Shooting Sports here in Richmond, Freedom Shooting Academy down in Virginia Beach, because both of those are huge ranges that employ at least 50 people. That didn't even get a hearing in committee. Senator Bell's bill over in the state Senate that would have addressed, it, as it was originally drafted, would have hit a lot of outdoor ranges, including some of our affiliated ranges. That was not his intent. It was just bad drafting on either his part or a combination of him and the legislative services. He was going after a particular issue that has that he felt has been a problem in Loudoun County with private landowners not shooting safely and then bullets leaving their property and in one case grazed a woman on a on another property. That bill was carried over. Helmer's bill is dead, is as officially dead as a crossover because they didn't get a hearing. So if he wants to address that in the future, he's got to reintroduce it next year. I'm trying to think of some other. Those are the two bad ones that we were really following. There are some other ones.
Because there were dozens. I mean, I don't expect you to keep track of every one of them because they lawmakers had introduced dozens. But let me ask you about one that is moving. I know you have talked about this on the Twitter feed. This is a bill that it's a House bill. I think it's passed out of committee. I don't think it's passed out of the House yet, but let me know if I'm wrong about that. But it's a bill that deals with the training for concealed carry holders. And this bill, as I understand it right now, removes the ability for NRA certified firearms instructors, and it would make firearms instructors have to be certified by the state, which could, again, really curtail the ability of a lot of Virginians to get the training that would be required in order for them to get their concealed carry license.
Yeah, that's House Bill 264. It did pass out of committee on Friday, was read for the first time yesterday, so it is also in a position to be passed out by the crossover. That bill was originally introduced to remove the video training option. There's a companion bill in the Senate that does just that part, doesn't even address the NRA part. The excuse in the House by the patron was, look, we're trying to take away naming specific organizations in the Code of Virginia. Now, they do this in quite a few other instances, and it was brought to their attention in subcommittee, but they weren't going to have any of that. So what they've done, even though they're telling people, and they even repeated this falsehood in committee on Friday, they're saying, we're just taking out the name. But the way you read the bill, when you X out the NRA, it says state-certified instructors or DCJS-certified, which is a state agency. So it makes it clear that you're going to really hamper rural areas that right now would probably need to find an NRA certified instructor. You'd have to go to a range that may be several hours away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to reduce the ability to get training. Now, here's what Dan Helmer said in committee. He went, there's the last provision in the changes of the bill says, or any training approved by the court, and the court meaning is the local circuit court because they're the ones who issue the concealed carry permit. So he's pointing back, well, the local circuit court could approve NRA certified training if that's what they want to do. But we all know what's going to happen. Arlington, Fairfax, Alexandria, their court probably won't do that.
Yeah.
Henrico has been notorious for trying to go past the 45 days ever since they passed this law. And so I could see that being a problem in Henrico County. So it's just an attack on the NRA is the opinion I and DSSA has taken, and it's not good for gun owners. It's not good for people who want a concealed carry permit holder. And I can see people trying to increase or get a permit if they don't have one now, because that's one of the exemptions. It's the Senate version of one gun a month passes, because if you have a permit, you can buy as many handguns as you want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I suspect that you're absolutely correct about that. I we've seen a surge in firearm sales. I believe the NSSF adjusted NICS numbers for January showed an 84% increase in Virginia compared to January of 2019. So we know that people are buying a lot of firearms. And I've seen some anecdotal evidence from, I believe it was Fauquier County, that the number of concealed carry applications had doubled in January compared to January of 2019. But you're right. As these bills that attack our right to bear arms go forward, I think it is going to drive a lot of Virginians to get their concealed carry license now, which, is kind of ironic, Dave, that, with all of the every one of these gun control laws that's being pushed in the legislature, the immediate result Is a backlash by Virginians who decide, many of them for the very first time, that they're going to exercise this right that lawmakers are trying to restrict.
You know, it wasn't too long ago in the Commonwealth that we had approximately 250,000 concealed handgun permit holders, and now we've got over 600,000. And that's not like over a 10-year period. That's like over a 5 or 6 year period. That's increased triple.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Not quite up to Florida level yet, but we're getting there. So, Dave, what is your advice to gun owners this week? Obviously, with the crossover deadline, things are going to be happening very quickly. We're about halfway through the legislative session. Where should gun owners be focusing their time and attention this week?
Well, this week you continue to contact your member of the House of Delegates on 961. I actually think we're probably going to see that come out with like a 50 to 48 vote. There is one Democrat that's voted against every gun control bill, Rosalind Tyler. She represents Jarrett, Virginia. It's a rural area, and I was double-checking the votes yesterday, and she's voted against all of them. And so I would expect she's going to be one of the people that would probably end up voting against this bill as well. But I actually think it's going to come out 50 to 48 like one other bill did. Another member that you might want to target is Delegate Lee Carter from Manassas. He's voted against, I think, the red flag bill and one other bill. So there are some that to at least reduce the support for the bill, even if it does get out. And then after crossover on Tuesday, you know, things are going to move very quickly because instead of having 50 or 70 gun control bills, they've got maybe 8 or 9 at the most. And so those are going to come up in committee, and we'll be letting folks know when they're being heard. And if you can be in committee to speak against them, do so. If you can't, just contact your senator or your House of Delegate member and let them know you oppose the bill. Even if you are pretty sure they're going to vote for it, they need to know they've got people in their district that are against it.
Absolutely. And really a huge thank you to everybody who has gone out to the Capitol, who has been there in those committee hearings. That includes you, Dave. I don't know if it's changed any votes, but it has certainly, I think, warmed the hearts of gun owners, seeing our fellow Second Amendment supporters there. But you're right. If you can't be there in person, email, call, but make sure that your voice is heard. Dave Adams with the Virginia Shooting Sports Association, thank you again for your time, sir, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen Story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report. In fact, we will start there. New York City, PIX reporting a man who ambushed police in the Bronx has a long criminal history. This was basically a targeted assassination attempt. There in the Bronx, where a guy with, again, lengthy criminal history, well known to authorities, walks into a precinct station, opens fire, and then when he runs out of rounds, he walks away and then lays down on the ground, waiting to be taken into custody. Police Commissioner Dermot Shea said, quote, "The coward from this morning shooting is in police custody. He has a lengthy, violent criminal history." Robert Williams, convicted back in 2002 of attempted murder. He was paroled in 2017. Shea said that the 2002 incident resulted in a person being shot, a carjacking, and a subsequent gunfight with police after he crashed a car. Lou Turco, who's president of the Lieutenants Benevolent Association there in New York City, said, quote, "If he has the audacity to shoot at officers in uniform, guess what he's doing to civilians of this city?" And he said, there are a lot of these people out here. He said, we need to get in front of this criminal justice reform. We need to work together to fix this thing, because right now the city of New York's residents are in danger because of this. Police say that Williams is the same man responsible for shooting at two officers on Saturday night and then opening fire inside of a precinct house on Sunday morning there in the Bronx. The suspect injured one of the officers sitting in a van on Saturday. Officer shot in the chin and neck, released from the hospital, believe it or not, Sunday afternoon. On Sunday morning, before that officer was released from the hospital, PIX says the same gunman again opened fire inside that police precinct 5 blocks away from that first incident. The officer shot in the precinct, also expected, thankfully, to recover from his injuries. But again, you got to wonder about a city where violent criminals and a state where violent criminals are, you know, let loose after 15 years, just 15 years for attempted murder and a carjacking and a gunfight with police. finished with parole. Not even that he got let out of prison after 15 years. He was done. He was cleared. There was no more prison sentence. There was no more parole. He was just walking the streets, a free man. At the same time, these same elected officials who are going light on violent criminals are cracking down on those who would like to exercise their constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms to protect themselves from guys like Robert Williams. Again, things backwards there in the Big Apple. All right, let's get to today's armed citizen story from, where is this from? From WIDB, Southern Illinois, Salem, Illinois, where a gun owner was able to use their firearm to protect themselves. That's a crazy mugshot, by the way. 20-year-old Salem man arrested after allegedly breaking into a home early Sunday morning, being held at gunpoint by one of the occupants until a Marion County Sheriff's deputy arrived. That would be Jordan Reinhart of Brubaker. May still have been a little inebriated there. He was arrested on criminal trespass to property, criminal damage to property, illegal consumption of alcohol or liquor. Yeah, it looked like he was an angry drunk there, according to that mugshot. According to SouthernIllinoisNow.com, sheriff's officials say that Reinhart had broken out the glass in the front door to gain access to this home. One of the residents then took control of the situation, the paper says, by holding Reinhart at gunpoint while another called the sheriff's department to report the incident. No injuries reported, and thankfully, those homeowners are safe and sound. Now, on to our armed citizen, excuse me, we just did our armed citizen. Onto our good deed of the day from Dearborn Heights, Michigan, where an officer is being honored for saving the life of a child last fall. This from the Press and Guide. Dearborn Heights police officer Mehdi Ayoub has been recognized for his heroism in helping to save the life of a toddler during a near drowning last fall. Fire Chief Dave Brogan went to the Dearborn Heights Police Department back on February the 6th to formally thank Ayoub for his action, praising the officer for assisting firefighters and EMS techs at the scene of the incident. He said, quote, "Officer Ayoub's taking immediate steps that day and performing rescue breathing techniques on this child was, quote, crucial to survival." He said, "Each member of the crew asked that our brothers and sisters at the Dearborn Heights Police Department be acknowledged for their roles in the successful outcome of this incident." It was September the 7th. Dearborn Heights Fire Department personnel dispatched on an emergency call to a home where a young child was reported to be face down in a koi pond. When they got there, the toddler had been pulled from the water, was receiving resuscitative procedures from Officer Ayoub. Other responding officers gathered information, worked to calm the, quote, understandably upset family. Child eventually loaded into a rescue squad unit, was to Children's Hospital there in Detroit. Fire personnel continued to work to save the child during the transport. Police Chief Michael Petrie saying, quote, "The actions of Officer Ayoub are representative of the longstanding tradition of cooperation and service to the public shared by the Dearborn Heights Police and Fire Departments." Officer Ayoub, relatively new to the force, joined in July of 2018 after working in the Dearborn and Livonia Police Departments. He is a local graduate there, focused on criminal justice studies at Henry Ford College. And again, back on September the 7th, was part of a team of law enforcement and fire personnel saving the life of that toddler. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Thank you for being a part of the program today. Please, again, if you're in Virginia, make sure that your state delegates have heard from you. You need to be calling them on the phone, letting them know that you are opposed to House Bill 961 in any form or fashion. We'll be back tomorrow with the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Town Hall Media at YouTube. Make sure that you get every episode of Cam & Company. You can also, if you want it as a podcast, you can get it at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. And you can also become a VIP member of BearingArms.com at BearingArms.com. Get exclusive analysis, commentary, stories, and more. We certainly do thank you for your support. We thank you for watching, for listening, for spreading the news. And we'll see you here soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.